Blog Talk Radio.
This is All About Wine, the talk show dedicated to the wine industry since 2009, featuring winemaker, cellar master, vineyardist, and tasting expert, Ron.
Basically, what we're trying to do on this program is just trying to educate people and trying to make wine less confusing and more friendly.
From coast to coast and around the world.
You know, we really have had some neat people on the program. I love that.
Post your questions and comments during the live show on our Facebook page at www.facebook.com/allaboutwinebtr. Again, that's www.facebook.com/allaboutwinebtr. And now, All About Wine is on. Here's Ron.
Right. Thank you, blessed people. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
Welcome to the show.
I was listening. We weren't live last week. Any of you who listen to us all the time heard that. I was listening to the show a little bit on Flightline Radio on Saturday morning. And after I listened to Mike, who is live every Saturday morning on Flightline Radio from 10 to noon, they have a repeat performance of, or a repeat broadcast of All About Wine. And so, since I listened to Mike for a while, I normally do taxes, and we got, power went out where I was working, and so I got here early, and which is very unusual this time of year. So, back to my story. I listened to All About Wine, and I listened to the opening. I listened to me going, All About Wine, every time they say All About Wine. And I am not saying it when it's recorded on the same time. I am off just a little bit. And I didn't realize how badly that was off. I mean, you know, what is it, 3 seconds? Yeah.
I think you've gotten about, you're about a second off. It's not too bad, but
yeah, but it's off. The point being, it is off.
Yeah.
And so I decided I would stop doing that because it really sounded weird.
Part of the show.
I'll probably do it again because every time it comes on, I'm thinking All About Wine. So I'll probably go back to doing it. But I really noticed that it was off. I didn't realize, you know, it was sort of like an echo effect and every time.
There's a delay in Blog Talk Radio because they're taking, you know, the phone line and all that, whatever you're on now, that you're on the direct connect, I guess.
I'm on,
And then, so there's a delay there. And sometimes when we have a guest on, and I guess when I'm on, there's a delay between, like, I'm listening to you and there's a, you know, maybe a moment of silence or a guest and we start talking. Well, they're delayed as well. So they keep talking because they're not hearing it at the time that we're talking because there's like a second delay. And we get into jams that way. It's not like a regular phone conversation where it's, you know, instant. There's you know, you hear a break in silence. You're like, oh, blah, 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 blah. But with the delay, they're not hearing you yet, so they keep talking. And then there's a lot of confusion there sometimes when, you know, when you're talking to somebody and they're like, well, you know, I come up at, and there's a break and you go, well, what about this? Well, they don't hear what about this until they start talking again, you know, sometimes. And it's like, oh, no.
I see. Because I've always noticed that.
It's a little delay there.
It was like when I said, Mike, is there any questions you have? And then it's like you're running back from going out and getting a snack in the green room and
I don't hear the question as it comes out or even the guests. You know, the guests are, we're on different times, I guess. It's just the delay.
That's weird. Never thought about that. Yeah, I noticed it on the opening there, but I never thought about it on guests, but it's rather obvious because we do talk on top of people all the time and
yeah,
never notice it, never pay much attention to it.
I think they call it latency. There's latency. There's, you know, different things going on there, and it's just one of the the microphones. I've gone through several microphones over the years, and there's a few that are, you know, if I had it plugged in directly to my headset, it would be instantaneous. And I used to listen to the shows that way. I used to have it to where I can hear the voice coming out of this, you know, when I'm talking, I hear it back to my headset because I know what it sounds like and I know where I'm at, you know, in the microphone's, you know, pickup field. But now that it's going through a software mixer that has a delay, I think it's a half second. And then the processing delays that it goes through for the, you know, there's like audio compression, all this kind of stuff. It's a bunch of, you know, technical crap, but that causes a delay. So when I try to turn the monitor on to hear myself through the headset, it's like I'll go, hey, and it'll go, hey. And I'll go, oh, this ain't right. Oh, this ain't right. And I can't talk like this. I can't talk like this. And I could not. I tried it one time. I tried reading like a news thing, and I'm like, I can't read this and hear myself. You know?
Yeah, I know.
It's just being delayed. And
oh, that little delay would drive you crazy. Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I turned that thing off real quick because, you know, I can monitor it, but, man, listening to that is no way. Turn that off real quick. I realize it was like a second later, but
that's enough. When I said the All About Wine, it sounds like that too. It's just got that little delay there, just, you know, like a little echo. Just,
But see, you're saying it the way you're hearing it. So
exactly.
You're hearing it in your time, even though it's already played. So by the time you're saying it, it's already done played, but you're hearing it at that time. So you're on time on your end. It's just not going out on time.
It goes through the system. It throws it off, you know. Yeah, because I'm saying it exactly when I hear it, exactly right along with it. And then I listen to it, and I'm going, wait a minute. I didn't say it late like that. You know, so that's,
yeah, you were right on the money on your end. It sounded great. You know?
Yeah. But then when the people hear it, they're going, why don't he just say it with them? You know, that's
15 weird. Years later. We're
yeah. Yeah, really.
Oh, well. It continues.
And so I will continue doing it, though. It's become a tradition. So, yeah.
Yeah.
All right. We don't have a guest tonight. We, as you can see, Mike and I were just chit-chatting there. And if we had a guest, they would have called in. We would have hoped anyway. But we do have guests coming up. I mean, we are really, I've been busy booking. Next week, No Love Lost Wine Company is going to be with us. And Jay Nunes. Jay Nunes of No Love Lost Wine Company. The 28th, we are going to have Joy and Patrick from Boutique Wine, not Boutique, but Boutique Wine. And then going into April, the 4th, Dear Native Grapes. They're located in New York. Alfie is going to be on. And the 11th of April, we're going to have Kim from Korea on. And Mike, you and I need to talk about coordinating that and seeing that. But that's coming up on April the 11th. And then on April 18th, Jessica Kogan from Connect the Dots, which is a new wine company that does working with people and all that for wine. April 25th, Round Pond Estates is going to be on. We have Ryan and Miles from that. And then into May, let me turn my calendar here. I am working on a couple of them in May here. So It's May the 5th, we're going to be doing a live show from London again, or Italy this time, I think. Where is he? He's located. He's in London. Okay. I've booked Mark, and he's in London. He's written a book called Italy in a Wine Glass. So we will be doing, recording that show on May the 5th and playing it probably May the 9th again on May 9th, which is toting. We figured it was 5 hours difference between us and London. But we're on daylight saving time, so that puts us an hour ahead. I don't think Britain is on daylight saving time, so it's 24 hours difference.
They are, but it's at a different time. When I was on that other station that was located in England, we went to daylight savings time or back to regular time, and then it was a month or two later, they switched. So we were 4 hours, we're 4 hours now, until they changed their time, and then we're back to 5 hours. It was weird how they kept saying that. It's like, oh, are you on, UK standard? Or I was like, what? I'll find out this if that's what they're doing.
May the 5th is when we're doing the show, so I don't know if they're on.
Yeah.
If they are, it's going to be 5 hours difference.
Cinco de Mayo. Oh, it's a Cinco de Mayo day. Huh.
Okay. Oh, is it?
Okay. Oh. There you go. Cinco de Mayo.
Cinco de Mayo. It is. I don't think he really cares in England, though. That's about as far away as you can get from a Cinco de Mayo celebration. London, we're going to celebrate Cinco de Mayo. You're going to what? So that's what we got coming up. We got a busy April and all that. So we've got guests, coming up. So stay tuned and listen. We should be quite busy and getting some very interesting guests over the next 2 months, actually, it looks like. And I'm not done yet. I'm still working on others. It becomes crazy trying to get people booked, and they have, I need one too, somebody that does this for me, but they have somebody that books for them, but different wineries, different things. They will say, the person that books it, whatever they are, says, I've got this show I'd like you to be on. Would you be interested? And they go, yes. And so they contact me and they say, we got so-and-so to be interested on your show. And I said, great. When can they do it? So they have to contact them and say, when can you do it? And they contact me back and say, we can do it on April the 18th. And they contact me and says, is April 18th open? I go, no, it's full. We can do this and this and this. So he comes. Back and forth with the emails. And it's crazy. And the movie, what's the name of the movie? The guy that we were going to connect with.
One from France?
England. France. Oh. Yeah. The French movie. What?
Mr. Bordeaux?
East to West?
Eastbound, Westbound, a winemaker.
There you go. Okay, Eastbound, Westbound.
Mr. Bordeaux. Jeffrey Davies and Gerard.
I need to get a hold of them directly. The person that I was booking through on them said, get a hold of them directly. Don't contact me. So I need to get a hold of those guys directly. And the mistake was when we talked to them Sunday, they expected us to call them. And so we may have to do it this next time, call them. I suppose we can still do it. We might not be able to hook up to Facebook, but we can still call them. Am I not correct in assuming that?
We may have to use, we were talking about WhatsApp or something. We can use one of those methods if they have it. We could do that.
Yeah, they were asking me about Zoom. We need to coordinate that because I want to get that coordinated before I start contacting them and setting up times. I'm going to be sure that we can contact them. So you need to watch your email. I will be emailing you on stuff when I find out through them. You know, so yeah, keep on top of that. So this is, you know, what we've got coming up here now over the next couple months. We've got quite a few interesting shows, some good guests and interesting shows. So stay tuned. But tonight you're with us, and we're already a quarter of the way into the show. We have a show lined up here tonight. We're going to talk about women and wine. March is Women Celebration Month, Women in the World Month. However it's referred to, and I'm not, no disrespect, but I don't know how it is referred to. But they've had seminars around the world and women panels and all sorts of things so far this month. I've seen references to it 5 or 6 times already. And there's other stuff coming up for the rest of the month. We're only on halfway through here. And in fact, speaking of halfway, we're Pi Day today. Today is Pi. All sorts of women celebration. And because March is the Women's Celebration Month, where I'm going to talk about women in wine and women in wineries and and women being part of the wine business, which really is not much. The number of women that own wineries, according to latest research, the latest thing, in California, owners or co-ownerships is 38%. That's California. When you start factoring in the whole world, that drops down quite a bit. The number of wineries in the world that are actually owned by women, I think, is around 5%, which is amazingly low. Here's a good article here. Women Winemakers of California and Beyond. Of the 4,200 plus wineries in California, approximately 14% of them has a woman as their lead winemaker. 14% is all. So that's pretty low. His question was, weren't 10% of California winemakers women in 1890? And it says the oft-quoted statistic has attributed this to journalist William Heinz, who wrote 2 books on the history of Napa Valley. Neither of the books mentioned this 10% figure, so it was probably considerably lower. And it wasn't until the 1960s that it started to get more women out there. First recognized woman winemaker in California was Hannah Weinberger. She took over after her husband's death in 1882. Yes, that's 1882. She became the first female winery owner and winemaker in Napa. And she ran Weinberger Winery until prohibition laws closed it down in 1920. That was a shame. So, but the first woman winemaker, 1882. That's just amazing there. How many women have been inducted into the Ventures Hall of Fame? 3. That's been it. We have Carol Meredith in 2009, Zelma Long in 2010, and Mary Edwards in 2013. It's 6.25% of all those who have been inducted have been women. 1982, Myla Hanley made her first Hanley Cellar Chardonnay from Mendocino. First time a woman had her actual name on the label. 1984, Mary Edwards was consulting in Mary Vinters, a small winery in the Russian River. She produced wine there and had her name on the label. Delia Veder of Veder Vineyards in Napa, 1989, had her wine on name on the label. Kathy Corson from Napa Valley also, 1987. 1989, Lane Turner had the Lane Turner label in Santa Barbara County, Southern California. 1989, also, Marty Bannister established Bannister Wines in Russian River Valley. 1997, Iris Riddell, I believe, was the first black woman to own a winery in the United States. And that was in Solvang, Santa Barbara County. In 1997, also Pam Starr partnered with Charlie Crocker to establish the Crocker and Starr label in Napa Valley. So, not very many women have had their names on labels over the years. These are in California. These are a new ones. This is all California here, this information. Let's see. Says, do well-known winemakers craft wine for more than one winery? Yeah, they do. Men mostly, it says here. Let's see what percentage. Here's a good question. What percentage of California wineries has a woman as an owner or co-owner? According to our research, female ownership or co-ownership represents about 38%. I think I just said that at the beginning of this, didn't I? Is there additional evidence about women receiving increased acclaim for their wines? There are some. Wine and Spirits magazine, top 100 wineries, they list 5 consecutive years. The percentage has been less than 10% in previous years, and 5 women listed. Also, Wine Spectator, top 100 list. They have women listed here in 21, 22, and 23. The highest I see here is number 3, Brittany Sherwood of Hines Cellars. On down from there. And number 3, Wine Enthusiast Top 100 Cellar Selections Globally. And in previous years, the percentage was less than 11%. This jumped up to 20% on the latest women on there. And number 4, Wine Enthusiast Top 100 Wines. There are 4. I'm reading the wrong column. There are 4. In 2022 of the California wines included in the top 100, 17 were in California, and of those, 4, or 23.5% from California, were wineries that had women as lead winemakers. And 22 California wineries are included. And last one here, are there California members of the African American Vintage Association who are women? Says yes, there are several, including Theodore Lee, Theopolis Vineyards, and McBride Sisters. There you go. There are quite a few globally, quite a few black-owned wines around the world. But the number of women is almost here. This question, how many black-owned wines are there? According to Bloomberg, Only 0.1% of the entire wine industry in the U.S. in 2020 was black-owned, and 0.06% of the wineries are black-owned in 2019. Let's see. I was going to talk about the women that were owning it. It's just, I guess it does in here. It does list. Well, is this a woman? I am confused. I am confused. That's black owned wine labels by regions. Okay, we've got that here, but it doesn't say. The article started out talking about women owning these, and now it just went over and included male and female in this. In this article. The states that are black-owned labels: California, Florida, Illinois, Kansas, New York, North Carolina, Ohio, Oregon, Vermont, Virginia, and Washington. Florida, when I saw that, surprised me on here, though. The wineries in Florida, Mermosa, I've never heard of that. Wondering Wines in Coconut Grove, and Wifey Brands. I'm sorry, never heard of any of those. And here I am in Florida. Mermosa, Florida's first black woman-owned wine brand, founded by Desiree Noisette, specializing in sparkling wines. And the brand is inspired by Noisette's ancestor, Celeste Noisette, a black Haitian woman whose white French husband, Felipe Noisette, held ownership of her and their children to protect them from slavery. When Felipe died, he left all of his possessions to Celeste and her children, who were all emancipated. Sounds like these are older wineries. That's why I've never heard of them. I'm sure they have closed since then. Wondering Wines, headquartered in Coconut Grove, Florida. Wondering Wine's line includes Cabernet Sauvignon and Chardonnay and others from Mall Valley, Chile. Co-founder Matthias Kiwanuka is the grandson of Uganda's first prime minister, was a 2006 first-round NFL draft pick, and played 9 seasons with the New York Giants. Wow, I never knew that. I never heard of Wondering Wines. And Wifey Brands, Venita grown Reposo grapes star in Wifey Sparkling Rosé, which launched in October 2019. I'm going to have to look those up. I have no idea where those are located or anything about them. The first one sounds like it's an older one, but that was interesting. Kansas has one. Jennifer McDonald established the first urban winery in Wichita, Kansas. And she uses grapes from California and Kansas. And North Carolina won, Ohio won, Oregon has quite a few, 5 or 6 there. Vermont won, Virginia has 3, and Washington. Then it talks about France and Germany and Italy, so they're quite a few black-owned wineries scattered throughout this country and around the world. But that was not what we were looking for. We were looking for women in wine. Let me go back to that. Go back. Okay, here we are. Women-owned wineries. Kathy Corson is an American winemaker, entrepreneur, and consultant. She specializes in Cabernet Sauvignon. She was San Francisco Chronicle's 2011 Winemaker of the Year. Woman winemaker, or winemaker of the year. I don't think it even said woman, just winemaker of the year. Good for her. Kathy is an American winemaker and specializes in, it all says the same thing under each of these categories here. Let me click on that. Women. Well, boy, this takes you to all sorts of weird stuff. Here you go. Here's some women winemakers of the USA. We got Pauline Lahote, L-H-O-T-E. She is a French winemaker based in Napa, noted for her sparkling wines. And she is the lead sparkling winemaker at Domaine Chandon. Whoa, that's quite a winery there. She's the lead sparkling winemaker. We also have Anne Moller-Rack. She's president and winemaker at Donum, D-O-N-U-M, estate based in Northern California. She's been in the business for 37 years and founded Donum in 2001. Donum, is considered to be one of the top Pinot Noir producers in California. And then it goes on, tells a little bit more about it. I'm not going to go through all that. Carith Overstreet. This is one woman who did medical schooling and post pursued her passion of being a winemaker. Overstreet started Brumelian. Oh, geez, why don't they just pick a simple name on wineries? They all do this, you know. I mean, everybody wants to be unique. And nobody can pronounce it properly. B-R-U-L-I-A-M. Brulium? Brulium? The vineyard, which was named after her three children. Her three children are all named Brulium. Huh? Starting with the single barrel, she has grown Brulium wines to 10,000 or to 1,000 cases a year. And she still does the day-to-day operation and everything. Kathy Corson. She's an American winemaker who specializes in Cabernet Sauvignon. Her winery was founded in 1987. She was San Francisco Chronicle Winemaker of the Year in 2011. She's one I just read to you about. And next we have Michelle Ouellette and Melinda Kearney. It's a mother-daughter duo who are the winemakers for Lorenzo Wines. When they first started, did not receive much recognition of the fact it was a low alcohol and pale pink rosé wine. No lows here. This was one of the women that do it. Another reason for it was that it was started by two women, but they persevered and stuck to it, and the success has proven that it's really been quite well for them, the no low and the pink pale pink rosé wines. Eileen Crane, the experienced sparkling winemaker, the most experienced sparkling winemaker in the United States. She spent 35 years in the wine industry. She is the CEO and winemaker of Domaine Conneros. She is most proud of her Blanc de Blanc Cuvée La Rubée, which is recognized worldwide as America's finest sparkling wine. Wow. That's something worldwide. Genevieve Johnson's. And she is the chief winemaker for Robert Mondavi Winery in Napa Valley. Robert Mondavi. Genevieve? Huh, I didn't know. We had a female winemaker there. Next one, Margot Van Staveren. She's been working at Chateau Saint-Jean for the past 37 years, and she was titled Winemaker of the Year by Wine Enthusiasts in 2008. And she is the one who does the final call on the decisions of blends and styles and everything else out of Chateau Saint-Jean. So, pretty big line of wines coming out of there, too. That's quite a job. Krista Scruggs is the founding owner of Zaffa Wines. Farm and ferment or forage and ferment. No fining, no filtering additives used in the winery. And no herbicides or synthetic pesticides in the vineyard. It sounds like she's right at the edge of biodynamic farming there. Krista Scruggs and Zaffa, Z-A-F-A. Catherine Hall. She is the proprietor of Hall Wines and Walt Wines in California. She is also a New York Times bestselling author, a perfect score. And besides being into wine, she's also a successful businesswoman, an attorney, and a community activist. Wow, Catherine, you are quite busy, I would guess. Stephanie Jacobs. She is the winemaker since 2017 at Cake Bread Cellars. We've all heard of Cake Bread. If you've ever looked in the store, you've seen it sitting on the shelf. In 2001, she went to work for Bogle Vineyards as an enologist before she landed with Cake Bread. So she's been active in Napa for some time. Melissa Burr was raised in Willamette Valley, and she is a winemaker for Cooper Mountain since 2013, I believe. Shauna Rosenblum is a winemaker for Rock Wall Wine Company. Kelly Urbanak Kooch. Kelly is the winemaker at Macari Vineyards. And she also leads the winemaking team for a Long Island producer. Long Island and California. Quite a commute back and forth. She got her BS in viticulture and enology at the UC Davis. And she has worked for several wineries that include Behringer and Beauchene Vineyards in California and Maison Louis Jadot in France. So she's got quite a pedigree there. Stacy Clark, she's a winemaker for Charles Krug, which is a pretty prestigious winery in itself. Charles Krug winemaker. Linda Trotta. She's been in the business for over 30 years, and she is now the head winemaker at Jameson Ranch Vineyards. And since 2017, she's been there. And she's worked as a winemaker in different places, including South Africa and Chile. So she's had some chances to do quite a bit of stuff there. Sally Johnson. She is a winemaker at Pride Mountain Vineyards in Napa, specializing in Cabernet Sauvignon. Aaron Miller, winemaker at Tuomi Cellars, or Silver Oak in Napa and Sonoma Valleys. Silver Oaks, some very nice wines coming out of there. She was on her way to West Africa because she wanted to work down some of her student loan debt. And she worked at Harvest in Napa, and since then she hasn't turned back. She's been involved with Napa wines and Napa stuff ever since then. Gina Gallo, familiar name. She's a winemaker at Gallo Signature in Northern California. Her grandfather is the original Gallo of Gallo Wines. And so she says she feels that her winemaking skills have came from her grandfather, Julio, as opposed to Ernest, Julian Ernest Gallo. Samantha Sheehan is the founder of Poe Wines, P-O-E. Poe produces traditional champagne method, sparkling wines, rosé, chardonnay, pinot noir, and nouveau from pinot noir. So those are women winemakers and women winemakers in California. They, and you know, a lot of times are winemakers, women winemakers, it says of the U.S., but I think those, basically, we had a list of California winemakers there. And let's see, what's that? Okay. Okay, this is this the one? No, I don't want to do that. Oh, okay, this is interesting here. This is something else. Here's a list of 13 women-owned wineries and tasting rooms that you can visit. These are women make up less than 14% of winemakers and winery owners in California, and 16% in the entire industry. 16% in the entire industry identify as people of color. So the percentage of women and people of color in the winery business is very, very small. But to find women in the business, to see Bay Area native and natural winemaker Tara Bajalia, B-A-J-J-A-L-I-E-H. Let's see, this doesn't give nationality. Is the newest woman added to the maker roster. It's from Terra Wine Company in Lodi. She makes an orange Vermentino and a carbonic Sangiovese. It's a canned wine, she says, canned by us, or support her women-owned winery by buying bottles. So there's one you can look at, Terra, T-E-R-A-H, winery. Second one, Nicole Walsh is a winemaker for a brand called Crushing Grapes and Center of the Ocean. Sir, S-E-R. Why? I had trouble reading that. Cool climate grapes from Santa Cruz Mountains. And they can her Cabernet Pfeiffer, a super rare grape that's out of this world delish. That's a quote. That's not me. Rosé of Grenache and dry sparkling Riesling. Her tasting rooms in downtown Aptos. Let's see, in Santa Cruz area, Aptos. I'm not familiar with the town of Aptos. So, Cabernet Pfeiffer, P-F-E-F-F-E-R. I'm curious, what does this say? Oh, it just takes me to her wine. It's in a can. Cranberry, pomegranate, and white pepper. An ultra-rare grape from 100-year-old vines crafted by Nicole Walsh. Recently profiled in San Francisco is very rare. Oh, it doesn't say too much about the grape itself, so I don't know. It's a dry red wine, 14% alcohol, and 0 grams of sugar. So, never heard of it. A new one that she has round up. It's in a can, so if you are interested in it, you can maybe find it there. And so that's Sir, S-E-R, winery in Santa Cruz. Sutra Wine Company in Hillsburg. Alice Sutro is the one that runs it, obviously, and she owns it. Women in wine, she loves to talk about women in wine and those who are doing it. She lives and works at Warnick Ranch in Hillsburg. And she says, come and visit. She'll take you on a 45-minute nature hike of the storied vines that create her Cabernet Sauvignon in Merlot as part of your tasting. She also is the winemaker behind our Maker Cab Sauv, the highest-rated canned red wine on the market. Maker Cab Sauv. 45-minute walk. Who wants to go on a 45-minute walk? Theopolis Vineyard in Mendocino. Theodora R. Lee, otherwise known as Theopatra, Queen of the Vineyards, is award. Oh, my engineer just brought me a wine. Let's see what she bring me. One 1,000 Stories, bourbon barrel aged Cabernet Sauvignon. Pictures proof? What does it say? Yeah, proprietor's proof. 2020? Yeah, 2020. She likes the bourbon barrel aged wines, and so we have quite a few of those in our wine rack. It says in the second half of the 19th century, explorers flocked to the American West in search of freedom and fortune. Crafted with their stories in mind, proprietor's proof Cabernet Sauvignon celebrates the qualities of adventure and optimism. This rich, full-flavored Cabernet Sauvignon expresses a pioneering spirit along with signature bourbon barrel notes of charred vanilla and dried herbs. Yeah, it's 2020. Let me do a quick taste of this and let you know. Oh, got a great Cabernet nose to it. It really does. I always like that. That's a good start to a nice cab, is when you have it jump out of the glass at you. Nice legs on the glass. For those of you who are into the legs, it's just got a nice coating on it. It's coming down rather slow. Oh, very nice. Fruity. Getting a lot of fruit to it. A lot of young fruit. Picking up some fresh blackberries and some fresh blueberries. Not ones that you find in an older cab. This is seems to be a younger cab. It's 2020 though, so this isn't that old. Got some tannins in it, but not a lot. The acid level is a little bit up there. I'm question the balance on the acid and all the other flavors. Acid seems to be a little bit high, but the bottle's just been open, so maybe it needs to air out a little bit in here. And that wasn't bad. Maybe it was just when you first taste it, the acid just seems to get you more than anything. But a nice wine. We're having pizza tonight. Pizza that's offering Pie Day. You buy one, you get the second one for free. So engineer ran down and got pizza. So this will be nice with pizza. This is going to be a good pizza wine. So let's go back to where we were on this. Theopolis. Otherwise known as Theopatra, Queen of the Vineyards, is an award-winning winemaker behind the Black-owned Theopolis Vineyard. Anderson Valley came there by way of San Francisco. She used to be a lawyer, a trial lawyer, and then, as it says here, she decided she needed a drink. It's noted for Petit Syrah and Rosé of Petit Syrah, which we can't get enough of, in Mendocino Coast, and all sorts of events and stuff that's up there. So, Theopolis, black-owned winery. Hanley Cellars in Mendocino. Myla Hanley was the first female winemaker in the United States to establish a label with her own name. She was in Anderson Valley in 1982, and it's been regarded as one of the finest vintages ever in the 1982. Now her daughter, Lulu, runs the operation and specializes in premium organic Pinot Noir with minimal intervention. You can visit everything and all that. The Maker X Handley Pinot Noir was the fastest wine to sell out ever. Campovita, C-A-M-P-O-V-I-D-A, Campovita, Hopland, Lush Gardens, gorgeous views, good vibes. And they have 6 different tasting experiences. Campovita is an experience to taste the organic Viognier or relax by the pool while you stay the weekend at their retreat. It's a woman-owned winery. Okay. Owned with her husband. J. Ducey Wines. Or has to be Janelle Ducey, D-U-S-I's wine roots start way back in 1920. Long-standing Ducey family tradition. Her grandfather, who really made her fall for the craft, and she's been passionate about the Italian wines ever since then, especially the Zinfandel. But her boutique tasting room can be found in Paso Robles. Sipper's Inn on the patio overlooking the vineyards and the old vines, too. Oh my gosh, they got a picture in there. Old vines, 95-year-old Zinfandel vines. That's cool. But those wines are really good. Whole vineyard of those, too. Cool. Desperada in Paso Robles. Velia has worked in wine for 19 years before she opened her winery called Desperda, I guess. D-E-S-P-E-R-A-D-A. Desperda. Desperda in Paso Robles. She does red blend, and they said that the red blend in itself is worth the trip. The labels depict different versions of Venus or Diana from the 19th century French paintings. And the crisp white wines or an Italian or Bordeaux blend, they have them all at Desperda. Stolo Vineyards in Cambria, California. Nicole Pope has worked harvests in South Africa, Australia, and Napa before she finally got her own winery, which she opened. And San Francisco Chronicle has named her the 2019 winemaker to watch. Says make reservations for a formal tasting, and Nicole herself will guide you through the tasting. They have Chardonnay, Pinot Noir, and Syrah, and an outstanding Gewurztraminer. So that sounds like that would be fun. That's in Cambria. Yeah, there you go. SoCal, Southern California. Cayman's Two Dreams. Well, that's a long name. Cayman's Two Dreams in Lompoc. Born and raised in Spain, Maria. Oh, what? No. Oh, I'm was reading the front line, first line. I was trying to make sense. It says, Maria and Tara are the wife and wife pair who met as harvest interns. The wife and wife pair. I don't understand. M- Mara was steeped in wine industry at a young age, and Tara, a California Central Coast native, was also. Together, they've harvested grapes in the Pyrenees Mountains of Spain, received masters in enology and viticulture, and now own and operate their own woman-owned winery, Cayman's Two Dreams. That's C-A-M-I-N-S, two, the number, dreams. Duo is noted for their handcrafted, terroir-driven wines that are fermented with natural yeast. Total tastings are private, personal, and delicious, and we wholeheartedly recommend it. So they do virtual tastings. Nagy Wines in Santa Maria. Clarissa Nagy fell into wine accidentally by making a batch of Voigné for a friend's wedding, and she was hooked. 10 years of hard work and all that, she eventually opened her own winery, Nagy Winery, N-A-G-Y. Now, the heart of it is Pinot Noir and Syrah. So check those out. They're in Santa Maria. And Casa Dumitz Wines in Los Alamos. Sonia Magdavisky is the personality and expert behind Casa Dumitz. She received a Fulbright once to conduct research in the Republic of Macedonia. Now every one of her bottles has a personal story and mission attached. And the tasting room is in Los Alamos, and it doesn't say what wine she makes. So, check her out, Los Alamos. And the last one is Peak Ranch Winery in Santa Barbara. Gil Wagner fell in love with the Santa Barbara countryside and Peak Ranch, particularly, and she began making wine. She met her husband, John, and they gave up city life and went into wine. And their Pinot Noir and Chardonnay have won countless awards. So you can check out their tasting room. It's open for reservation. And so call and make reservations first. So there you go. There's women ran and wineries throughout California that you can visit, and tasting rooms and all that. Let's see. There's something else I wanted to tell you before we left here. Or was I saw it today when I was looking through this stuff, and I'm trying to see. Is this the one? I don't know. here's it. It's talking about women-owned wineries around the world. Here's Aslina Wines in South Africa, owned by, that name's going to be fun to pronounce, N-T-S-I-K-I, Natiski, and the last name, B-I-Y-E-L-I, Bayula. Another one here, Teresa Herdia, Gary Farrell Winery, and that is located in the left bank of Bordeaux. Is that right? No, that's not right. No, that is located in Russian River Valley. No. Steph Dutton from Penfolds, that is Australia. Domaine Me Goodard. That's in France, one of the premier areas of the Beaujolais region. Born in South Korea, so that's Me, M-E-E is her first name. Alice Tétanin from Henriot, Champagne, again, France. She grew up running through the vineyards in the area and all that. We got Elena Walsh from Elena Walsh Vineyards, and that is in Italy. And let's see, oh, closing. So there's a few from around the world also. Not a lot of women in the wine business, but it seems the ones who are doing it have grabbed it by the horn and ran with it and are making some great wines. All these articles I read, and I tried to familiarize myself with as much as I could before the show today, and all the articles I read had nothing but praise for the wines that the women are making. The styles and the wines themselves and all that. So it's something that you should check out. Check out women. Just go to Women in Wine and you will be inundated with all sorts of articles and stuff for women in the wine around the world. And give them a chance. If you patronize them, there will be a good chance that there will be more of them popping up there. And who knows, you know, the percentage might jump up from around the world from, you know, 5% on up to 10, 15, 20% of women making wine and owning wineries. So we're done with another episode. We'll be busy with guests for the next month.
Yeah, it looks like the next one will be Jay Nunez from No Love Lost Winery.
Did I send you that information?
No, not yet.
Okay, I'll start sending you all this stuff here.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I got names. I can look up some of this, but that kind of helps. I can, like, the next week is, I can pretty much find stuff there. But so that will be our next show, which will be next Thursday, and that is March 21st. We do have a guest, as he said at the beginning of the show. That's Jay Nunez, No Love Lost Winery. So natural wines in Napa Valley. I almost said Napa, Florida. Where did that come from? Napa. The other Napa, you know.
The other Napa.
Yeah, not the Napa, the other Napa in California.
The other one. The lesser known other Napa.
Yeah. I don't know why. It just almost fell off. But, thank you all for tuning in. As always, we do appreciate it. And if you have any questions, comments, or you'd like to be a guest on the show, please email Ron directly, allaboutwine101. I'll wait till you get a pencil. @gmail.com. So, allaboutwine101@gmail.com. Ron will get that. Check out your qualifications or, you know, what have you, or any of your comments or questions, and we'll go from there and take the appropriate action as necessary. So,
and a couple of announcements. Happy St. Patrick's Day coming up Sunday. Let me see if I can find it here real fast. Do I still have it here? I saved it. I might have clicked out of it while I was playing with all sorts of stuff here. And here we go. Let me go through this quickly here. 6 celebratory value wines to pair with corned beef. This is a suggestion. This is from who? This is from Wine Spectator. So, 6 celebratory wines to pair with corned beef. Cabernet Rieslings from Germany. They're reasonably priced, $28. They got just some spiciness, some ripeness, grapefruitiness, you know. So, Cabinett, Cabernet Rieslings from Germany. Here's another Riesling Cabernet. They suggest this one specifically. In fact, I think that's what they're doing here. I read that. It's not. Nick Weiss, St. Urban's Hof, Riesling Cabernet, from Moselle, $19, 90 score on that. Wow. Another cabinet, recent cabinet, Moselle. This is a 92 score, and it's $29. Reds from France's Côte de Rhône, St. Cosmo, Rhône, 2022. This is $21. Alan Vogue is Côte de Rhône La Perosis, 2021. That's $25. And Domaine Marchand, $25, a score of 90. So they're saying cabinets are some lighter Rhone Valley reds would be good partners with your corned beef coming up Sunday on St. Patty's Day. So there, I saved that and I wanted to read that and I forgot all about it until I just mentioned St. Patty's Day. So there you go.
All right. Very cool. Thank you for that. And as I was March 21st, we will see you all next Thursday. Thanks again for tuning in. And we'll talk to you all at that time, 7 p.m. Eastern time, right here on
and
where you're listening to.
Tune in Flightline Radio this Saturday, too.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. Oh, and we have a new show on Saturday evenings that's live. So guy did really good. It's all about the 80s. So everything on his show is 80s music, 80s advertisements.
Does he do that too?
Like, yeah. I was listening to one and I go, this guy's playing a Burger King commercial, but it's not like today's Burger King. It was like back in the 70s, 80s. It was pretty cool.
Oh, that's cool.
Okay.
Yeah, I heard you advertise him, and I didn't get a chance to listen to him.
He's got different ads that, not getting compensated or anything for it, but it's just, something to keep it, like you're listening to an old 80s radio. I mean, it's kind of interesting.
Oh, that's cool. I'll have to tune him in. Saturday night's at 8 to 10, is it?
Yes. Yeah. Wow. 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern time. So I thought that was pretty cool. He does a good job.
Cool.
Thank you for that. And we will talk to you all next week. Be safe. Have a good weekend. Be safe on St. Patrick's Day. And, drink responsibly. Don't do anything stupid. We want everybody to be safe and return. And
listen to us next week.
Yes. All right. There you go. Have a good one. We'll see you.
All right.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening.
This is
all about wine.
Wrong button. Yeah, see, wait. And that was the intro again. Here we go.
This concludes tonight's broadcast of All About Wine with your host, Ron.
The buttons are next to each other, and one says intro in capital letters, the other one says outro. How could...
Fat finger tonight. Yeah.
Could be, yeah.
For show information, links to All About Wine on Twitter and Facebook, or to be a guest on this show, visit the show website at www.allaboutwinebtr.com. Archived shows are available for download on iTunes or on our show page at blogtalkradio.com/allaboutwine. Thank you for listening. Drink responsibly, and we'll see you next time on All About Wine.
All About Wine.
There you go. All right. Very
green
good.
Room.
Green room, yeah.